Well, good morning. I want to extend Christian greetings to everyone this morning. This is a very unique experience to be here, and in this particular way, that children's class, Kevin, was very interesting. I kind of remember the story when it happened, but the lesson on anger is something that we can all use. There was a thought, a little phrase that was running through my head, that today's toddler can turn into tomorrow's terrorist if you don't do something about it. But you know, there's another thing that can turn into something pretty terrible too. And that is if today's toddler starts telling stories that aren't true and telling things that are not factual. You know, that was brought home to me here a while back. There was a certain individual in our house that did some work with a scissors that was susceptible or suspicious. And this person was confronted with the question, did you do this? And they said, no. Nope, did not. Very convincingly. And the dad of this person asked again, because he wasn't 100% sure that this was a true story. Nope, it wasn't me. But the mom came down and found some evidence. And with the evidence, when it was confronted, they still wouldn't admit it. It must have been somebody else that looked like me, or it could have been something else. But finally, the evidence matched too perfectly, and they were found out. You know, we can all be that way sometimes. And this morning, I'd like to invite your attention to turn in your Bibles to Matthew 5. And I'd like to read a few verses, starting in verse 33 down through 37. This is maybe a little bit different angle on dishonesty. This isn't really dishonest per se, and yet I think it ties in a little bit. I'd like to read this on Jesus' teachings about oaths. In Matthew 5, 33 through 37, Jesus gives us some instructions on not swearing oaths as a Christian. And why would Jesus say that? What is wrong with that, with swearing oaths? This is a message that Jesus preached, and I'd like to learn some lessons from his message. Matthew 5:33 says, "Again, ye have heard that it hath been said by them of old time, Thou shalt not forswear thyself, but shalt perform unto the Lord thine oaths. But I say unto you, swear not at all, neither by heaven, for it is God's throne, nor by the earth, for it is his footstool, neither by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. Neither shalt thou swear by thy head, because thou canst not make one hair white or black. But let your communication be yea, yea, and nay, nay. For whatsoever is more than these cometh of evil." And that's a direct reference to Exodus 20, verse 7, where it says, "Thou shalt not take the name of the Lord thy God in vain. For the Lord will not hold him guiltless that taketh his name in vain." What's the connection between swearing an oath and taking the name of the Lord in vain? What comes to your mind when you think of taking the name of God in vain? Do you think of bad words? What do you think of when you think of taking the name of God in vain? So let's just look. What is an oath? When we go to court, it says, do you swear to tell the truth? Do you swear
By what?
When a government official takes an office, they put their hand on the Bible and they swear on the Bible to fulfill their duty. Why do they use the Bible? Isn't it because it's a reference to something of a higher power, something that is greater, maybe, than man? And so they use that. An oath is something that has been pledged or promised, or that which has been pledged or promised with an oath, or with something that's greater than something, something that's sure. It could also be, Strong's calls it a fence, a limit, or a restraint that I bind myself to. That's an oath. And man, in Hebrews 6, I believe in verse 16, it says, men verily swear by the greater, something that's greater, and an oath for confirmation is to them an end of all strife. That's in Hebrews 6. And that was talking about God swearing by himself for the promise to Abraham. And so for many people, swearing by something that's greater than them, they can bind themselves to something greater than them, that's supposed to guarantee truthfulness. So what, in Matthew 5:33, the Jews were told that they were not to forswear themselves, but to perform to the Lord their oaths. And forswearing is the thought of swearing falsely, to lie under oath. And that was where they drew the line, to not lie under oath. So if you bind yourself to a higher power or a higher thing or something that is for sure, like by heaven or by God or by the temple or by as sure as I'm standing here, that kind of thing. They commit themselves to that. And if they lie under oath, that was wrong. But Jesus said, the swearing part, forswearing was to swear falsely. The swearing part was to take that oath and to promise, to swear, to affirm, to promise an oath. To affirm, to promise, to threaten, or in swearing to call a person or thing as a witness. That is something that Jesus changed here in this message, in his message, was don't just swear and not lie under oath. He said, don't swear at all. Why would Jesus say that? In Matthew 23:16, he gives a little bit of a light. There's some scriptures I'd like to read here, but Jesus gives some light on this subject. Matthew 23:16, and the next several verses, he was talking to the Pharisees here. And the Pharisees had created a culture of technical loopholes. Now Jesus says, woe unto you, or shame on you, you blind guides, which say, whosoever shall swear by the temple, it's nothing. But whosoever shall swear by the gold in the temple, he's a debtor. What's the difference? He says, you fools and blind, for what's greater, the gold or the temple that sanctifieth the gold? And back to the Jews, whosoever shall swear by the altar, it's nothing. But whosoever swears by the gift that's on the altar, he's guilty. You fools and blind, for what's greater, the gift or the altar that sanctifies the gift? Whoso therefore shall swear by the altar, sweareth by it and all things on it. And whoso shall swear by the temple, swears by it and by him that dwells therein. And he that shall swear by heaven, sweareth by the throne of God and by him that sitteth thereon. Jesus is saying there's no difference. He said that's just a fiction in your own mind that you're making up. Jesus says, don't swear at all. Let's go to Matthew 26, and we'll read another chapter on, or another portion on swearing. And this is in a very negative context. And this is Peter. Peter is around people that are very unfriendly, would be very unfriendly to him if they knew who he really was. And so Peter was trying to lay low, and yet he was also warming himself up, but he was laying low and trying to be anonymous. Now Peter, in verse 69 of 26 of Matthew, now Peter sat without in the palace, and a damsel came unto him, saying, thou wast also with Jesus of Galilee. But he denied before them all, saying, I know not what thou sayest. And when he was gone out into the porch, another maid saw him and said unto them that were there, this fellow was also with Jesus of Nazareth. And again he denied with an oath, I do not know the man. And after a while came unto him they that stood by and said to Peter, surely thou also art one of them, for thy speech bewrayeth thee. We can tell by the way you talk that you were one of them. Then began he to curse and to swear, saying, I know not the man. And immediately the cock crew. And Peter remembered the word of Jesus, which said unto him, before the cock crow, thou shalt deny me thrice. And Peter went out and wept bitterly. Why did Peter curse and swear and use an oath to disassociate himself from Jesus? Didn't he think that his word would have more credibility if he could swear by something greater than just his character? And if he cursed and swore, that would be so unlike Jesus that they for sure would know that he wasn't part of Jesus' followers. What? Why did he do that? And let's also go over here to James 5, verse 12. That is, James is also giving some instruction here. And James says, but above all things, my brethren, swear not, neither by heaven, neither by the earth, neither by any other oath. Don't swear at all. Don't anything. Just don't swear. But let your yea be yea and your nay, nay, lest you fall into condemnation. The interesting word here is condemnation. And in the Greek word for this, condemnation, is a word called hypocrisis, which means acting under a feigned part. So if you read it like this, above all things, my brethren, swear not, neither by heaven, neither by the earth, neither by any other oath, but let your yes be yes, and your no, no, lest you fall into hypocrisy, lest you become something you aren't. You know, swearing an oath is using the sureness of the name of God, the supernatural, or the sacred, and binding ourselves to that to create more value to our word, or to give our word more value, more credibility. Does this really guarantee our truthfulness? You all know of people that have lied under oath, and court cases are full of people that lie under oath. So is corruption temporarily erased in a person that has sworn to tell the truth? If there's a person that is a liar, and they swear on whatever, on the Bible, for example, that they will tell the truth, does that magically make them tell the truth for a time? For some people, it probably does. And other people, it will not. But you cannot take an oath and transform a person into a not long term, into a truthful person. You can't take a liar and transform him into a truthful person by swearing an oath, or you can't guarantee that anyway. A liar that swears isn't the name and reputation of God dishonored because of lying and the breaking of promises under oath. That's taking the name of God in vain. It's when you swear by him and you take his name and you or his word or something he's created and you swear by that, as sure as that is, I will tell the truth, and then you turn around and do not tell the truth. That's taking God's name in vain. And a representative of Christ cannot do that. A representative of Christ should not do that. A liar that swears to an oath to be truthful becomes a hypocrite. Because he's a liar, now he's going to tell the truth, but he's still a liar. He's just going to tell the truth. He becomes a hypocrite, just like it says in James 5:12. He has not genuinely changed. He's only using the oath to appear as an honest person. Another thing I think is interesting is that the swearing of oaths allows, this is a big word, for a compartmentalization of character. And compartmentalization, if you think of a box, a normal box is open inside. It's all one. But if you have little compartments, a bunch of little boxes inside it as little compartments, there can be other things compartmentalized or boxed off inside this box. And swearing an oath allows for the boxing, little boxes of different things in our character. It allows for pockets of dishonesty in some areas of life, while requiring absolute honesty and transparency in others. Think about that. If a follower of Jesus is to be transparent, and so it's a yes should mean just as much if I say yes, or absolutely yes, or truly yes. And there's nothing wrong with saying truly, truly. Jesus did it many times. Or that word yea, yea means yes in the strongest form, but don't swear by something else. Make sure your character is genuine. That I say something, my word is binding, whether it's yes or whether it's no. But allowing for pockets of dishonesty in some areas of life can unpackage some nasty surprises sometimes, or allowing those compartments to be there. So something I'd like to think about in this, let your yea be yea and your nay, nay, I'd like to think of honest communication. And when I say honest communication, I'm talking about our life, our character. What are we as a person? Do we believe that a genuine character produces consistent results? Or do we compartmentalize our life? Do we have some facets of our life that are honest and some facets that we can be shady in? What are we like? A genuine character produces consistent results. Followers of Christ are called to represent him. Untruth or dishonesty in any form is not representative of Christ. Our words and communication are a form of our character. And you know, as a parent, if I see my child that displays traits of dishonesty, it's my duty, my God-given responsibility to try to train this young child in the right direction, to train them to point them to Christ. I cannot make the decision for my child, but I can point them to Christ by example, and with discipline, and with and love as well. But with my training program, a big part is example. So what are some examples of shady communication that my child can pick up on? And am I as clean and transparent as I like to think of myself as? And as a child, I personally have had a big problem with shading the truth. I wouldn't say outright lying, as in just a black and white lie, but shading the truth is something that I have firsthand experience with, and even now it's easy to do, and at times, very easy to do. And sometimes old habits die hard. So as parents, our example is caught by our children. So what are some examples of shady communication? One is promises to children. If we tell our children that we will do something, we'll give them a surprise, or if they accomplish this, we'll do that, then we need to make sure we fulfill our obligations. Absolutely fulfill that. As parents, we cannot be caught changing the rules just because we feel like it. And I understand there's maybe times when we can get ourselves in a corner if we promise a trip or something like that, and we maybe can't do the trip on the day that we say because of weather or because of sickness or because of some unforeseen thing. That's understandable, but we still need to make satisfaction with our promises. Another thing, in business. How am I in business? If I tell a customer that I will call them back, do I make sure that I call them back or communicate in some way to them or be at a certain place at a certain time? That's all sometimes hard to do all the time. But do I communicate? Do I say and do what I say? Another thing that we can do as parents or as adults, and it's easy to do this, and I think our children pick up on that, is sometimes in our joking around or our kidding around, we can play pretty loose with the truth sometimes. And if we play loose with the truth and pass it off as I'm kidding or I'm joking or I'm this or I'm that and make excuse for myself, my little child can pick up on this. And they take it, they don't know the difference always between joking and not joking, and they just take it and run with it because dad does. Another thing that can be shady communication in my life is manipulation or ulterior motives. And what I mean by that is maybe not word manipulation all the time, although it can play into that, but acting out a part to get someone to do something for you. I knew a boy one time who acted like he was too tired to stay awake, so his mom would not make him do the dishes. He would sit at the supper table and act like his eyes were going shut. And sometimes his mom would say, oh, he's too tired. He can go to bed. And then he would not be tired anymore after a while. That's manipulation. Or the boy would sincerely apologize, or apologize as sincerely as he could to escape punishment. That's manipulation. So moms, if you're listening and your boys do that, don't go very easy on them. Flattery is another thing. Flattery. That could also come under the manipulation category. But making someone feel good to get something from them. We all like to feel good, but we really feel used if somebody makes us feel good and then takes advantage of us right after that. That makes us feel very unfulfilled. And an example of this would be, "Grandma, I love you. You're the best grandma ever. Now, can I borrow your car?" Would be one thing. Or, "Grandma, I love you. You're the best grandma ever. Your car has a flat tire." That's another thing. But there's 101 different ways that you can flatter someone to get something from them. Another thing, technicalities. The Pharisees were good at technicalities. And we're good at technicalities if we really analyze it. And that one of those examples would be portraying something that is technically true but is out of context. And in a business deal, you know the story where you sell a cow that's blind with the apology that the only reason I'm selling it is I just don't think she looks too good. And, you know, you might be different, but and you might not see it, but I don't think she looks too good. And so you sell the cow, and the other person finds out later that it's blind. That's portraying something in a different context, even though the words are technically true, but it portrays it in a different context. Portrays it in a different context than what it really should be, so that the people take it from you. Another thing, and this is one that I personally knew of, but one time there was a bathtub that was taken out of a remodel job, remodel project, and it was a bathtub that was perfectly good still, one of those porcelain bathtubs, or at least it looked good when they took it out, and there were some boys that were out playing. And they used a metal bar, and they thought it was great fun to chip the enamel off the bathtub. And when the dad found out about this, well, they left some big rocks laying around there too, and when the dad found out about this, he asked them, "So did you boys damage the bathtub with the rocks?" And the boys said, "No, we didn't." Which was only half true, because we didn't damage the bathtub with the rocks. We did it with a metal bar. And he said, so then the dad had to pin them down some more. "Did you damage the bathtub?" "Well, yes, we did, but not with the rocks." And the technicality was not amusing to the dad, but the boys were trying to use it to get out of punishment. So things like that. Technically taking something out of context to squeak by punishment or to get out of something. That is shady communication. And that's the kind of thing that in a world of people that are crooked, in a world of people that are dishonest, latching onto an oath to guarantee truth is something that looks appealing. And yet God hates that. Because many times his name is used in vain in that process. Another thing to think about is our speech, our life. There's a couple different words or meanings for the word circumspect. In Exodus, there's a word translated circumspect that in the New Testament is translated take heed. And take heed simply means to be aware. Be aware. And I'd like to think about or encourage us today to be aware of how our life really appears. Is it transparent, or are we compartmentalizing small areas, small things? There. Be aware of our testimony. Is the third section. And in Peter, or in Matthew 26, when Peter was around the fire there, and they said, "Surely you also are one of them, for your speech bewrayeth thee. Your speech tells us that you were one of them." So does our speech bewray us today? What does our speech, our communication, the work that comes out of our life that communicates with others, what does it show in our life? Our speech and communication shows our character. And a genuine character that seeks to follow Christ will seek to be honest and trustworthy in all communication. There should be no compartmentalization of character. The genuine character is the same throughout. The hypocrite, on the other hand, has an unknown number of compartments, some of which hold some really nasty surprises. Am I a hypocrite today? That's an ugly word, but am I a hypocrite today? The genuine character will not need an oath to bind them to tell the truth. Their life is one of truth and not of hypocrisy. What do those who know us best have to say about us? That would be a good question. You know, our communication tells on us. Our communication, how our life is, tells on me, and it tells on all of us. So today, I want to encourage all of us to look at our life, to be genuine, and make our yay, our yes, a real yes, and our no, a real no. You know, so many times in the Bible, we go to the Greek to figure out the meaning of words. But I think that in Greek, the word for yes is always consistent, and the word for no is consistent. And I know that if somebody came to me and asked if they could bring their dog in the house, the word would be no, and that meaning would not change no matter what language they looked it up in. And that's how it should be in our life. Our yes should be yes, and our no should be no. God bless you. Let's stand for prayer.